Ah, hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 164, I was very fortunate to have Bea Borman on the podcast today. She is a comedian, writer, speaker, a communications trainer as well. We talked about many things. We talked about her life over in the United States, how she managed to get herself into college. We talked about how she moved to Boston and how she ended up in Germany. We talked about many things, and I've got to say it was a joy to have her on the podcast. I look forward to speaking to her again, no doubt, in the future. She is a lady who is, just starting out, and big things are ahead of her. So please subscribe to the podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and yeah, have an awesome day and enjoy the show. Awesome. Ha ha. Peace. Ha ha ha. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 164, I am very privileged to have Bea Borman on the podcast today. Yes, I got the name right. I'm loving it. She is a comedian, writer, speaker, and a communications trainer. How are you today, Bea?
Hey, I'm doing great. Happy to be here and feeling fresh. Yeah, I'm doing good.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here today. I'm glad you're safe and well. But yeah, you know what? One of the things which I have to ask. Now, where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, which is sort of the Midwest or Northeastern, really, next to Chicago, Illinois, and one of eight. Yeah,
one of eight. Okay, like, man, I can imagine what the household was like when things kicked off in that place, jumping one way or the other. So, answer me this: so, when you were in Indiana, one of eight, did you decide to go all the way to New Mexico just to like, oh, you know what? I want to be alone.
No. I am the baby of my family. And we traveled a little bit. We left New Mexico. We left Indiana when I was 13 and moved to Colorado. Mm. So Colorado Springs. So I was a little bit closer to New Mexico then. And that's when what I decided, I mean, the long story is that I met my first husband in Colorado, and then we came to Germany, and I had two kids. And when we went back to Colorado, we decided that it wasn't working. And so then I had a decision to make of what I wanted to do. And I tried to think, and I thought I was going to go to Mexico and become a writer. So I got on the Greyhound bus and I was like, I'm going to get out in Mexico and become a writer. But if I chicken out, if I, you know, lose my nerve, then I'm going to stop in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And that's the last place before the border, and get my English degree. And so that's what I ended up doing, getting my English degree in Las Cruces.
You went, okay, that is an interesting twist of fate there. So like you went, okay, I'm gonna become a writer. But then it was like, yeah, you know what? I've seen the way writers live when they're like coming up. I can't do this. I can't have those long nights where I'm like thinking, ramen. It's like ramen can't be my friend for all this time.
So, it's a shame. Yeah, the struggle is real though.
Okay.
And really the bus, it was really the bus got a little dodgy. So, you know, somewhere around Las Cruces, the people who were getting on the bus, you know, it just started looking dark and you know, a little scary. So I was like, I gotta get off.
You know what? I've got to say, look, I have been on a Greyhound bus a couple of times in my life when I was over in the States. And look, all I've got to simply say is Greyhound buses, they can't help it, but they always do look dodgy. You just kind of like, okay, you get like, you get your seat, you sit down, and like, yeah, I prayed. Like, I went to Boston and I was like, yeah, I was like, okay, just like think big thoughts, sit down in your chair, and hopefully no one will sit next to you, and then I can go to sleep. But yeah, there was no sleeping for me. I was like, okay. I was like trying to get out of New York City. 5 hours later, I was still in New York City. I don't understand it, but yeah, Greyhound buses are crazy. So you went, okay, I'm going to do a degree, like I'm going to do an English degree. Like, how long did it take you to actually get registered to do an English degree? Because it takes time to get registered. How?
Oh, well, I mean, I did time it. I timed it so that when I got to Las Cruces, it was really the start of the semester when they were taking people in. Mm. So I moved into this little dive hotel. Yeah. And I, you know, that's when you had $13 a night sort of hotel motel.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just lived there, and I went and signed up for school, and then I was right in the first semester. So it wasn't, it wasn't long. It was like 2 or 3 weeks after I arrived that I was in my first semester of school. And it, New Mexico State is a wonderful university, and yeah, the best time of my life. Yeah.
Like, is it a serious school, or as the Americans say, a party school, or is it something in between?
It's something really in between, because it really is artistic. It's a very artistic place where people are trying all sorts of new, you know, new age age ideas, and you're in the desert. And Las Cruces is known as the city of lost causes. So, you know, everyone who ends up there is sort of a little looking for themselves or looking for something. So it was great. I fit in perfectly there.
I wouldn't call you a lost cause. Well, let's just say maybe a cause wandering in the night. Just needing that light, lighthouse to take you home.
Exactly. That's what it was. Looking for that guiding star.
Yeah.
And white sands. It's really beautiful. And Virgin Airline guy, wasn't he just in New Mexico? Truth or Consequences, doing his shot into the atmosphere.
Yeah, Mr. Richard Branson. Yes, crazy British billionaire. Flying into space. And look, all I've got to say is there are much of American media and YouTube a little bit salty about that. It's like, no, he didn't fly into space. He was still, on the edge. Yeah. Nah, he didn't fly into space. And like, yeah, I just like, okay. Like, look, it's not your money which is going up there. It's like, he's just there to like, how can I say, rain on Bezos's parade for a small period of time. Who knows? Who goes up into, I think he goes up to space, if not this weekend, I think next weekend. So you'll have Jeff Bezos, world's richest man, world's public richest man. There are other people who, if they had Jeff Bezos's money, they would literally cry.
That's not enough.
Yeah, that's like, you got $230 billion. No. No. So much more. So, over your time studying for like English in New Mexico, what was the sort of drive behind you sort of signing up? Like, you thought it's one of those things, I was going to do a book, and if I chicken out, I'll do my degree. But like, yeah, there must have been some sort of driving force to sort of like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this. If I wasn't doing that, I'm doing this. Would you be able to take me through that?
Yeah. Well, and it was just what you said. I hadn't gotten my degree. I had gotten married instead. And when the divorce or when we decided that it wasn't working out, we had two small kids. Yeah. And my husband, at that time wanted to take the kids with him. We decided, you know, that we would split custody and he would take primary custody of the kids. Mm-hmm. And so, and like I said, I just realized it's like, I need a degree. I was like 30 and I was just like, oh my goodness, I really need to work on me a little bit more. Mm. And also to elevate the life of my kids, you know, because we were, getting by really. He comes from a middle class family, but my family is poor when you think eight kids. So I wanted to raise the conversation for my kids. I wanted to raise the bar for my kids.
You wanted to move from surviving to thriving.
Exactly. And so that was what my tunnel vision was get this degree and, you know, start working. And so I wasn't, at that time, I wasn't aspirational. Like now I can say, I'm aspirational. Yeah. But then it was just, like you said, to thrive and to get a degree that would, you know, keep me off the streets kind of, and, you know, give me 40 hours of work.
Oh, you're like, keep me off those streets. Is that mean
streets. Yeah.
That's right. Look, I've been on the Greyhound bus. That was enough. I can do it. No, I can't be on these streets. No, the Greyhound bus was bad enough.
And I did. I mean, I realized that, I'm not like huge on struggle. You know, I can struggle a little bit, but I'm not huge.
Just put me on my, like putting me in a place of discomfort for a little bit, not too much, just a little bit. It's like, I'm, like, just to know it's real. I've had enough. Come on.
I know. Yeah. Like that was enough. So take my little degree and I moved to Boston and started working at MIT as an administrative assistant. And then I worked for a nonprofit as a training coordinator. And around the time, while I was working as a training coordinator in Boston, I met my husband, who's German, in a little jazz bar, a really popular jazz bar in Boston. I can't remember the name of it now, but Wally's. It's called Wally's, and it's like a legend. Uh-oh. And but it was near my home in Dorchester, so I would go there for happy hour, and I would go there on the weekend because it had great jazz, or it has great jazz. I think it's still open. Wow. And and there he was with a friend at the bar, and it was packed. And I heard him speaking German, and I said, "Oh, ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch." You know, famous last words. I have not learned too much more German beyond that. Like, ich kann ein bisschen Deutsch sprechen. So then we started hanging out, and there was like a little club of us because they were new to the US. So we all started hanging out together, and that was another fun time in Boston. Like the 7 years we stayed in Boston.
Mm-hmm. My God. Like going from New Mexico to MIT, like that is very impressive, to say the least. Look, put it this way, doing your degree at the age of 30, is very impressive as well. And having that focus to like carry on and push on through, because you know what? There will be people who go, okay, yeah, look, you've got your two kids. Like, yeah, just you're there to take care of your kids. You're done. You're dusted. It is kind of unusual, like in this state. Well, even back. Well, back then. Custody. Well, one mature student at the age of 30 in the United States, and two, the custody going to the father. Was that just agreed so you could sort of do your like stages of development with regards to the kids?
It was. We were friends. My ex-husband and I, we managed to stay friends. And it was just a verbal between the two of us. And I didn't even file for divorce. I mean, we were still married when I went to New Mexico, but my mother-in-law told him to divorce me. And okay, you know, I get it because I wasn't there. So I said yes, and the divorce went through. But my focus, I think, was thinking, how can I lift us up a little, you know?
Yeah, because like you did mention at the time, you didn't have aspirations at that time. Like when did you sort of discover you wanted a little bit more, you wanted to make things better for yourself, you wanted to like succeed, be more than the sort of sum of your parts. When did that happen? Was there a point?
Oh my goodness, that happened so much later. I mean, it happened so much later because every time I would sort of rise, I think I would come back down because mm-hmm. I would, you know, I was in that mindset. I was born in 64 and, you know, in Indiana, it's sort of poverty level. And really, my mother, she managed to get her degree, but it just felt sort of like we were just in the system, like we were just system people. And so, yeah, so for the longest time, even when I came to Germany, then he was my fiance. Even when I came to Germany, my mindset was still that there was lack, that you know, I wasn't good enough, that I couldn't do anything really legendary, and so I felt small. But then what happened was, my husband found Toastmasters, which is a speaking organization. And I wasn't really meeting anybody in Germany who spoke English. We aren't connected to the military at all. So I went to this Toastmasters meeting and started speaking and learning how to be a speaker. And then one night, I tell you, this is really how it happened. One night I was looking in my Pinterest feed and it said, why are you trying to fit in when you were born to stand out? Mm-hmm. And then that was my aha moment, you know, because I mean, I dyed my hair white, you know, I really decided, okay, you know, it's okay for me to be out here. It's okay for me to be me. And I'm hiding in plain sight anyway. So it wasn't like I was hidden because I'm the only like African-American. I was the only African-American in our neighborhood, you know, and this. So it wasn't like I was hiding in plain sight. But then I started, once I sort of got that, and then I started listening to people like, what's her name, Tracy, to different motivational speakers. I got into listening to different motivational speakers. And I was in Toastmasters for a good 7 years. And then once I quit Toastmasters, I thought, how can I use my speaking skills further? And I decided to become a stand-up comedian. And yeah, because I realized that it was like that I am supposed to be out here. And yeah, and so then my bubble started growing and getting bigger, you know, and yeah, and then I became aspiration. Then I said, yes, you know, I want to make $1 million. Yes, I want to speak on bigger stages and open myself up to that possibility.
Yeah. You know what? Like, this is the thing. It's all one of the hardest things to do, I think, in life is truly sort of finding yourself. And one of the things I would say, it's depending on your depending on sort of family settings growing up and everything like that, it sometimes dictates on how quickly that can happen. And look, don't get me wrong. Look, I'm the product of an only child. And that, look, it took me a little bit of time to find my voice and sort of where I fit. And I can only imagine the sort of, look, when I say like a when you go a household of eight, now don't get me wrong, look, one kid in a household can be angelic and nice, or it can be like absolute chaos. Two kids, you're parenting. Three kids, you're a bouncer, like, and you're just all just trying to keep like trouble like down to a minimum. When you go into like, when you go into four, five, six, I don't know what that is. It's just like, I think it's like a platoon. It's like, yeah, parents come out like drill sergeants, like, okay, yeah, attention. But with all of that, it must be incredibly difficult to, like, you know what I mean? Even just to stand out amongst your siblings, that is a difficult thing to do. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, the story, when I wrote a book called Girl, You're Not Crazy. Mm. And in that, I talk a little bit about my childhood, because what happened was my mother had a nervous breakdown when I was born, you know? And so I wasn't actually in the house with those seven kids at first. I was like raised over here in a whole nother surrounding. I was raised, you know, like in the Baptist church, right, and with two other foster kids over here in this nice middle-class family. And then the system was like, let's give this woman who had a nervous breakdown, let's give her all eight children back, because all of us was out of the house. And I was the baby. I didn't even know any of them personally. So yeah, so they were like, let's give all eight of these kids back to this woman.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about bedlam. I mean, talk about, yeah.
The very definition, I imagine. No, because like, this is one of the things I never could understand about social services wherever they are in the world. Like they will break a family up when it seems to be a-okay, and then like they'll stick people together when it's like, you're like, are you sure you're doing the right thing? Don't get me wrong, like being like, if you're a kid in the system, it is a tough life. And look, and it's one of those things where when I worked over in America, I was working in summer camps. There was an organization called the Fresh Air Fund, upstate New York, which basically they sent either kids out to farms and like experience nature that way, or they came to like basically a big summer camp. Well, it was sort of five different summer camps on this huge, like, not compound, but this huge, it would be classed as a nature park. And like, yeah, I was in Camp Hayden Marks. And like, this is the thing, when talking to some of the lads who were there, they were from 8 to 12, they'll talk about, okay, yeah, they'll give me the whole sob story. And I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, I'm living with my grandmother and stuff like this in the system. And I was like, okay, yeah. Then you were like, okay, after the first encampment, that like my sort of like, oh no, that changed rapidly to like, look, I've heard every story there is, don't bother, look, because the system is the system, and once you get to a certain age, it will treat you differently. As so I can understand the whole sort of like being in that system. It's not pleasant, it's not good, but the circumstance you were in, maybe it should have been there a little bit longer, or found another way. Yeah. I don't know. Because going in a household literally of strangers, that must have been really tough. Also affecting your personal development.
Exactly. And, you know, it was like being thrown into a pack with some pack animals. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. Goodness forgive my siblings hear me. But they know how tough it was for me, because they knew each other. They had grown up at least sometime together. Yeah. So they all knew each other, but I was like a baby, so I had no background with them. And then when my mother came, it was really, you could have turned it into one of those made for TV movies where she came with some books. I didn't know her from anywhere. She was just standing in the house with my foster mother. And it was just one of those like reveal moments, like, this is your mother. And so it's like, oh, okay, you know, and that was sort of the processing I was able to do. But anyway, it took, you know, we lived in that situation together. And it sort of turned into, it was hard. And then, like I said, it was in the 60s, and it was sort of like, what can you be? Well, you can be a secretary. Well, you could be a nurse. Mm. But there was no sort of like, you could be, you know, a professor, or you could be a doctor. So there was none of that. So, yeah. And then, of course, being a Black woman, it was sort of like, who was raised in this poverty level. Yeah, there was a feeling of scarcity. And it took me a long time to get over that feeling of their scarce resources, you know, or there will be scarce resources. Mm. So, yeah, but yeah, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Now, I'm going to just ask, how old were you when you like first, like, you know, got moved from your like foster parents to back in? How old were you then?
When I met my mother, I was 12 years old.
Oh my God. So basically, how long were you with your foster parents for?
12 years. Since the time I was a baby.
Okay, that's all kinds of fucked up. I've got to say that. I'm sorry, but yeah. But yeah, okay, yeah, that, yeah. Wow, that's crazy. No, that's it, absolutely bonkers. But like, yeah, but like, this is the thing, to address your like sort of realm of scarcity. Look, it's one of those things, I think, with regards to the world, like, and where we live in and what we do on a sort of day-to-day basis. I think everyone has that feeling, no matter where they come from, that there is like what we live in a world of scarcity. The majority of people, like, there's going to be other people which are not going to think like this, but it takes a lot to sort of get out of that mindset. Because look, if you think about it right now, like you're a comedian, you're a speaker, you're a writer. Now, the amount of speaking gigs you can get when there's no global pandemic, there must be a good few hundred conferences which go on a daily basis. And mm-hmm. you as a speaker have a lot of options. And like, you know what I mean, to take that up. You as a writer, you can write, there's 7 billion people on the planet. Even if 2 billion people know how to read, even if you reduce that to say 100 million people, well, 400 million people know how to read English, yeah. A billion people, that is still a lot. The subject matter, you might go, okay, it might go down to 2 million, but 2 million books, that's still a hell of a lot. And like, yeah, and you just simply go, the resources of the world, when you're talking about as an individual for opportunity, is almost endless. It's just a case of having the confidence and being bold enough to go out there and sort of see some of these opportunities. I think is one of those things where you got to do those journeys of discovery. And like, yeah, with yourself, mm-hmm. like going from Mexico to Boston, and like basically it took you until you got to Germany to sort of like go, hey, why was it Germany which was the sort of thing what ignited that sort of vibe in you?
Mm-hmm. I think it was being away from that feeling of scarcity that, to me, is sort of the U.S. has. If you have a job in the U.S., for most people, they're going to put you at a cap. You know, like, you can be a secretary, then you can be an executive secretary, but that's going to be your cap. Like, unless then you go and learn something different or move into another space. Now, and what Germany, how it is different here in Germany is they don't seem to have sort of this idea that you have some sort of limitation. Mm-hmm. Everywhere I've been, they have been open to you being in meetings. They have been open to everybody, secretary, no matter who. If you have an idea, people have been open to taking it up. You know, being a solopreneur is an opportunity that everyone has in Germany that they will sort of help you with. The the government will help you if you say, I have an idea for a business, or I want to do my own this, that, and the other. There's help for that. And so, yeah, in the US, I think you sort of get tunnel vision. You know, it was like, okay, I managed to get this degree and I managed to get this job at MIT. And so I'm working, you know, and now I'm an executive assistant. So I'm at the top of my game, you know. And so you get stuck in that box that you think you fit in. And once you take that box away, and I hope people are lucky enough to get in some sort of situation where that box is removed, because it, just like the pandemic did this for us, it sort of made us scatter. You know, it was like, okay, we all need to rethink what we're doing. And when you have that reset, where you have to rethink everything about yourself, about the way you live and do things, then that's when possibility comes in. You know, that's when creativity comes in. You know, that's why so many people, when they lose their job, you know, after a couple of, once they get back on their feet, a lot of people say, well, that was the best thing that happened to me, because it forced me to move. It forced me to get out of this rut that I had, you know, put myself in. Yeah. And so that's what Germany did for me. And like I said, it was Toastmasters. It was meeting other women. I belonged to the Heidelberg International Professional Women's Association, and meeting other women from all over the world, you know, meeting physicists and psychologists, and just all of us being together and sharing ideas and, you know, coming up with work for ourselves, since we're, you know, outside of the system a little bit, as expats and things like that. So yeah, having those conversations with other wonderful women and having the support of other wonderful women who were like, what do you want to do, Annabelle? We will support you, you know? And with that fertile soil, once I had this fertile soil, then it became easier. You know, then it was like, you know, listening to Lisa Nichols and reading Eckhart Tolle and other things that opened my eyes to all the potential that's in all of us. But we lose it because we get trapped in the tunnel vision.
Yeah. Like sometimes I think it's a bit of both. Like this is the thing. Okay. In life, the thing what normally smothers like our sort of dreams and stuff like this is procrastination. But procrastination comes out of this realm of comfort. And when we live in that realm of comfort, it's like, okay, right. So it's one of those things you don't like push yourself to like, oh, you know what? Let me see if I can do that a little bit more. And like, So it's like you don't really push yourself, but like then like society goes, right. Not unless if you're really out to sort of like break those walls down, smash through that quote unquote glass ceiling of the limitations put on you. Not financial, it's just the limitations like society sometimes put on you. Mm-hmm. It can be difficult. And like, look, with yourself, like going, like the sort of thing I think put you out of that realm of comfort, you moved all the way across the Atlantic to a new country. Well, you've been there before, but a new country, a new environment where, okay, English is not the first language. And if you did turn on the TV, like, it's not like they've got most of their shows in English. No, because there's 100 million people in Germany, they dub everything. Well, that basically, it's not dubbed, it's in German. You just like, okay, right. And then you're having to now find new friends, which it's trickier because, okay, you're now an expat living in this community. So it's like, yeah, you've had like one sort of major sort of shift to move you out of your comfort, and now you have another major shift to get like what's moved you out of your comfort. So it was like, yeah, you, as you say, fertile soil. But it was like, yeah, I think that whole sort of step of like, yeah, I'm moving out of my comfort zone, look how far you've come, look how far you're going. Like, look, you seem to be like an unstoppable force of nature. So, yeah, like, Where, like, so with this, like, you've been in Germany now for 6 years, is it?
Oh my gosh, since 2005.
Wow. Wow. So you've been in Germany since 2005. Now, what would you say have been, apart from the sort of growing experiences you've had, what would you say have been sort of a major lesson you've learned before leaving the United States, a major lesson you've learned when you first got to Germany, and a major lesson which has brought you up to sort of this day, present time?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the U.S., I learned that there is possibility, that there are possibilities. And the U.S. has that sort of this idea that anyone can make it, anyone can be, you know, the Cinderella story just runs through the fabric of the of America. And so you sort of have this in your subconscious that, you know, anything could turn your life around and you could, you know. So I had that. So I had that kernel that was in me from the U.S. And then when I moved to Germany, like I said, it went into some fertile soil, because then I was an outsider and I had to find ways to fit in. I first became a business English trainer and I really enjoyed that. But like I said, it was learning more that people wanted to know what I wanted, what I wanted out of life. What was I trying to achieve? And then that made me question what it was that I want for myself. So that questioning was there. And then, and what Germany has, which is really great, is they have this sort of discipline. And so that was nice too, to be in a place where they're like, you know, what are you doing? What A, B, C, what is your plan? How are you going to do this?
German discipline and efficiency. Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, put your money where your mouth is. What are you doing today? You know, so that was great. And so, and now I've learned that, like you said, I think it's that to always try to be a little bit outside my comfort zone, to know that this is what life is about. It's about becoming. You know, we lose that, like you said, when we get comfortable, because and we all want comfort. I think our brains are like, oh, I don't make me think. Don't make me, you know, come on, let's lay down with some chocolate and call it a day. You know?
It's like, ah, chocolate, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no eye of the tiger when you're comfortable. So you have to sort of try to stay lean is what I'm doing now. And it's this thing of just of evolving. So what are you doing in the book? I remember I saw this in a movie. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, I'm evolving, you know, I'm just growing and seeing sort of where that takes me now. I'm curious myself. I'm like, wow, look at you. What's next? You know, and open, being open to and saying yes. That's what you hear a lot from people like Lisa Nichols, to just with, you know, with fear, with knees knocking, just say yes and go for it.
Yeah, like there's this YouTube channel called Yes Fairy, and one of their mottos is called, like, basically seek discomfort. And like, yeah, they have done some, how can I say, not so much crazy things, but like stuff which you just go, that is completely off the wall. Like basically one of the ventures they did was like they let a supercomputer, like basically AI, like dictate what they did for a whole, I think it was 48 hours or was it longer? I think it was a little bit longer. And like basically it went, yeah, go to the airport, go here. And like was like, yeah, it told them to like seek out, I think it was the governor of like, I can't remember, was it in Ohio, maybe? I think it was Ohio, like, to find this governor and like basically, okay, yeah, and have a meeting with him. And it was like, okay, they did that. And I was like, right, It was like, it was strange having our lives sort of dictated to by AI. But like, yeah, they didn't have anywhere to stay. Like they got, like they basically got to the airport. Like, yeah, they found people they could stay, like spend the night with. Then it was like, yeah, needed to get a car. They managed to get a car, Lyft. I was like, yeah, one after the other, after the other. But with these Yes Fairy guys, they'd seek out discomfort. And like, yeah, there are a bunch of Canadians now living in LA. They've like, I think they've been doing it for, I'm most probably very wrong about it, about maybe 4, maybe 5 years. And that's just one example of the adventures they have. And like, you know what, with regards to yourself, like, okay, look, going all the way over to Germany. And like, yeah, you eventually became a writer, the very thing you kind of ran from, you like you went into. So like, yeah, like how did you get your first book up and running?
It's, you know, it is that thing of who I'm listening to now. And like I said, it's motivational speakers. And of course, Tony Robbins, one of my friends, is really, you know, gave me some of his material to listen to. And so I decided, I've always been writing, don't get me wrong. So
yeah,
I've been writing short stories here and there, and getting those published. And, you know, I would say I get like 3 or 4 short stories published a year. So it's nothing groundbreaking, but, you know, but I enjoy it. And then I thought, well, I was a speaker, and what they said is, if you're a speaker, you need a book. So, you know. So yeah, it's sort of this thing of people telling you. And so, and I'm so naive that I'm kind of like, oh, okay, that's what I need to do now. I need to write a book.
Yeah, no, this is the thing. I've been doing, like, I've done 1 or 2 podcasts now, and look, yeah, everyone who speaks, if there isn't a book there, I'll be like, oh, what? You don't have a book? okay, yeah, no worries. You do you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I have so much joy in writing. So that was there. So, you know, and then like I looked at one of the websites, Google or something, and I Googled how to write a book, and they're like, okay, get 10 chapters and then do 10 subtitles and 10. And so I did it like that. And it was like, okay. So this is how you structure it.
Yeah.
And what do I want to write? And of course I have my story about my childhood, which is different from a lot of other people, but I also have humor, because I believe that that's what life is about. And humor is about rebellion. You know, when you laugh at life, when you say this, you haven't gotten me yet. You know, you haven't pulled me down yet.
Yes, you know? I hear you.
Yeah. So I did a humorous motivational book. I decided, okay, I'm going to write a humorous motivational book about my life and what I've learned or what I think and what I know. And maybe someone else can look and say, okay, yes, I've been there, or, you know, I never want to go there. It's like,
no.
Yeah. I always say, you know, of course, who wouldn't want to be an example, but you got to give something to the warning too, because if someone's a warning, then that keeps you off that path. So you don't have to make all the mistakes yourself. You know, if you can look at someone else or listen to someone else's story. And I love Kyle Cease. He's a humorous motivational speaker. And one of his books that I read is, I Hope I Messed This Up.
Okay.
You know, and that's sort of his philosophy is just do it. You know, just throw paint at the wall, just have fun and create, be creative. And so I decided to self-publish. I got an editor, and so I had someone edit it for me and put together the cover, and to do the all of that, all of the art and all of that for it. And then I went straight to Amazon and I was like, hey, Amazon, I have a book.
Amazon looked at you and, okay, give me it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got the paperback and I just released it for ebook. And I think I'm going to try to do an Audible of the book, because it's just a fun book. It's just, my story, I think, is a little different from others. And being a comedian, it's just trying to make people laugh and not take this too seriously, because we're rolling around in the dark, you know, on a big ball. So
yep,
relax.
Going through the heavens at magnificent speed.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Like you don't think about it too much, because if you do, you're like, oh my God. We are out in the infinite. And the infinite now, when you say the infinite, yeah, infinite amount of things can happen. Either which way, yeah. We're here for a crazy ride and enjoy it while you can. That's what I simply say. But like, the fastest I've ever heard someone write a book on this podcast was 2 weeks. And the longest, I think, was about 5 years. How long did it take you to get your book together?
I think 8 months. Okay. I think, yeah. Because like I said, I had the outline. And then the idea for what I wanted to be in it, and it basically wrote itself. You know, it was just, it really was a fun book to write. And I'm trying to think of what my next book will be. And yeah. And like I said, I love writing humor. So it's just, I took a class. And so I decided I was going to write this one woman show. And okay. So that's what I'm doing now.
One woman show. Okay, what is this one woman show about? And if you say it's about me, I'm like,
What else do I know?
Hey, look, you know New Mexico, you know your family of eight, you know Boston. Like, hey, you know how to like get on a Greyhound bus and like, yeah, you know what? I'm stopping here to go to college. You know many a thing. You know Germany. It's like, so yeah. What is this one woman show about, Greta?
Yeah, well, it's called, I just started writing it. It is called Pussy Lanimous. And I was in a...
say that again?
Pussy Lanimous. Pussy Lanimous means coward.
Okay. Yes, because it sounded like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it sounded... That's what I got.
Excuse me? I cannot see people walking by the pose. Like, what? Oh.
Yeah, it is one of those words. But that's why I love it. It's one of those $10 words. It just means coward. And it's really what I'm talking about, how I, or how we sort of become cowards in our own life. Mm. And how do we break that spell? You know, how do we push out there? And so a comedy, it's going to be a comedy. I haven't sort of, well, you know, I've heard about the Edinburgh Fringe and some other different spaces. But this is what I'm working on now. So I'm not even that far yet that I can just hand it to the Edinburgh Fringe, you know. So.
You know what? Hey, 2022, 2022, 2023. It's going to be the 2021. It's the kind of like people find their feet, but 2022, 2023. It's going to be the comeback years. Yeah, I would say, yeah, if you get up and running in those years, 2022, by all means.
Exactly. Yeah, so this is pretty fertile time where you're working from home, like I'm working from home too, mm-hmm. and I only work 2 days a week, and I'm on short-time work because, you know, of COVID and everything that happened. Although now I've had my shots, and so they're like, you can come back in to work. I
you should have lied. You're like, no, I haven't.
No,
I just had one. Oh no, you can go back.
It's a great company. Teaching business, English, and communication. So it's a lot of fun. But 2 days a week. So I have plenty of time. Like you said, this year is this year where you really can sort of do, you know, create or try whatever you want to try, because it's, you know, you're sort of out the door, halfway out the door, you know, so why not ride the wheels off?
Indeed. I know. I hear you. And like, this is the thing, like with the sort of last 15 months, okay, let's not the first 5 months, because we didn't understand it was like looking like rather terrifying. I was like, okay, am I going to have to go outside? I had Walking Dead friend, like going through my head, yeah. Like, yeah, seeking out just a can of beans. It's like, okay, click, here we go. It's like, and that would be a hard mission, like, especially in the part of London I'm in. Like people go, oh yeah. When you're in a middle class area, things start to go downhill fast. Yeah, they turn vicious quickly. Creative ways. But for the last sort of year, when we sort of got a better idea of what this was and how it's affecting people and everything like this, I would say if someone went, the common excuse, the only reason why I say it's a common excuse is because people go, the factor of time. I don't have the time to do this. I don't have the time to go here. I don't have the time. Only if I had the time. Oh, for the love of God, if I had the time, I would do this, I would do that. There were many things you could have done which didn't involve traveling, didn't involve doing this, didn't involve doing that. But yet the people who went, I don't have the time, still didn't have the time. Look, trust me. I had the time to pick up Tiger King. When I was sitting down next to my lady, and I turned on Netflix and the Tiger King trailer came up. It was like, I was like, okay, I'm watching this. And time, 5 hours went by. And I was like, okay. I was like still in hard. But I took that opportunity to get in work with my podcast. I took that opportunity to push myself on other fronts. And look, from what you're saying, you've done the same. And I think when people say they didn't have the time to do it, excuses be excuses, and they don't get you much in life, you know?
Yes. And I saw, I forget who said it, but someone said, don't say you don't have time. Say it's not a priority. You know, because what you prioritize, you make time for. So, so don't say you don't have time, because we all get 24 hours. And and how are you spending it? Like you said, I do the same. Sometimes I think, oh, I'm going to sit here and get lost in a movie. But I tell you, I do. I have guilt. I get guilt. And so I'll start speeding through a movie, because it's like, let me see what's going to happen so I can move on. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. No, yeah. The guy who said that, I believe that was Eric Thompson. Excuse me. He is, I call it, he's a hip hop preacher, motivational speaker as well. Down the same lines of Tony Robbins, Mel Brooks, yeah, and Les Brown. Got to say, Les Brown is one of my favorite motivation speakers, because the story I like what comes from him when he was when he was working at the radio station, and he was like, okay, one of the DJs was getting, quite lit up, drink some more, and slurring his words, and got a telephone call from his boss, sounds like gross. Why don't you call one of the other guys? He was like, okay, I'll call one of the other guys. Click. And he was just watching him. He goes, yeah, drink, Rick, drink. I can't remember the guy's name exactly. It's like, yeah. But An hour later, boss calls up again. He's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Have you managed to get hold of everyone? So, no, I haven't been able to get hold of anyone. Like, it's a crying shame. He goes, yeah, you best go in. And I was like, yeah, okay. Click, called up his mother and his girlfriend. I'm going to be on the radio tonight. It's like going, like one, like the reason why that story sticks out to me, there's another one, but that story, we seldom, like when we prepare, we don't, like we prepare when that moment often is just on the horizon. Like we don't sometimes prepare when you should be like thinking that moment, the horizon might come up tomorrow. You just don't know it. It's not like we are always on alert. And I think that's one of the things I think people need to sometimes, especially when they want to go somewhere, do something big or spectacular. That's what they need to do. Be like, yeah, I am ready. My moment might come today, tomorrow, 100 days from now, whatever. But I am ready, good to go, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Luck is what, when preparation meets opportunity? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I totally agree with that. And I have definitely enjoyed creativity and thinking about what possibly could come next, you know, and thinking of, because I did do some theater, although I'm not the thespian, but I did do some theater. So, you know, there's a place to rent, like you said, in 2022 or so, or maybe at the end of the year, there's a place that you can rent here that's really cheap, you know, and I go put on my one woman show there, or, you know, I do some YouTube videos and do some moments. So there's all sorts of opportunity for all of us. It's just that you decide to take it, you know, to really go for it. And I wrote on LinkedIn. On LinkedIn, I had put a little meme that said, "We are our gatekeepers." Now, really, publishing, you want to be published, you don't have to go to a publisher, just publish it, you know, just put it on TikTok, just do anything, just go for it. You know, we don't have all of the many gatekeepers that we used to have. Now it's you and what you want to do.
Yeah, like, yeah, speaking of TikTok, you're there with, like, yeah, you're following 33 people and you've got 161 followers. And I've got to say, look, you've got a couple of videos there, which, you've got one video over 13,000 views. Like, hey, and like, you know what I mean? Just going with it, just making it happen. Okay, I'm liking that a lot. So like, this is the thing, look, okay. You say you're not a thespian, but like, this is the thing with the theater, like it's either comedy or tragedy. Mm-hmm. And how did you discover comedy?
When did I discover comedy? I mean, it's always sort of been there. I was a huge Irma Bombeck fan. I still am. I think Irma Bombeck was like one of the funniest people ever. Chris Rock and other people. So I've always sort of been keen on comedy and the use of humor to slide in messages to change people's minds and to impact people. And so I think that's why I decided that I wanted to use humor, to use humor in communication, to teach others how to use humor, because it is such a strong force, and it's not so light. Some people think, you know, that it's sort of a throwaway skill to laugh, and it's not. It's like art, you know. People, you never know that you need it until it is missing, and then it's like having someone give you water in a desert. You're like, oh, you know, all of us when someone makes us laugh, it's like, thank you. It's a gift. And so I want to be a part of that gift for people and a part of that lesson that we all have to learn, which is You know, I think levity, the law of levity is over the law of gravity, you know? And so, so live it, go light.
What I've got to say is, if you can like give the medicine of laughter to people, like basically that medicine is the thing which can, it can bring people out. It can stop them doing like things which might hurt, like harm themselves. It can be the thing what helps them, as you say, lift them up. And like, it's the things what also sometimes is the things what help us. Yeah. I froze for a second there. I think you froze as well. But nevertheless, as I was saying, it's the thing what helps bind around the world. So if you can bring that to the table, if you can bring that to someone's life, I think that's it is a noble endeavor. It is a hard thing to do. It's never an easy thing. But yeah, how did you find like comedy clubs, or like how did you sort of like, you know what I mean, get your whistle wet, and especially being an American in Germany doing comedy, which, hey, it's like chalk, cheese, oil, water, like cats, dogs, please pick one of the like one of those cliches. Like, how was that?
Well, it started, like I said, that I wanted to do something with my speaking ability. And I decided, because I mean, I'm now, I hate to say it, but I'm 55. So I decided that I wanted to be out in the clubs. I wanted to be having fun. I wanted to be with all kinds of people. And so comedy does that for you. It doesn't care how old you are. I know a comedian who's 80 and she's going strong. And so it really, anyone can be there. Everybody has, it's a level playing field. And so I was happy to, I was lucky that, like I said, this women's group that I belong to, I started writing for myself.
Yeah.
You know, putting together like little skits and little things, jokes that I thought were funny. And a friend who's in this women's group, I told her, I'm writing, I'm doing comedy. And there's a comedy club in Heidelberg that's inside an Irish bar. And so this Irish bar puts on comedy.
Okay.
And they just let me get up on stage. Yeah, they were like, okay, you do comedy. So that was the bug. Yeah, that's when I got the bug, because I was up there. And I can say for, you know, a good 2 or 3 minutes, people laughed. And it was like, yes, you know. So, and I think I had 5 minutes. And so I started maybe in 2018. I started in 2018, and then I started moving around and doing things. Like I said, I went to London and did some open mics there. And I love to write. And I think that's what, my humor is different, because my humor is basically really, it's almost cerebral. And I have to be careful, because I love wordplay, mm-hmm. and I like, you know, doing things with language. So, so it's sort of not sort of off the cuff kind of humor. So it's almost like Weird Al. Do you remember Weird Al Yankovic, who he did the songs that was like,
yeah,
like Beat It, Michael Jackson Beat It. Stuff.
Yes, I know Weird Al. Yes, I do. Because like, yes, he did the Michael Jackson parodies, and like did two, and like which came over here in the UK. I can't remember. Yeah, did a number of them. But yeah, the biggest one was like two Michael Jackson things, if I remember, like Eat It was one of them.
Eat It.
Mm-hmm. And I can't actually remember the name of the other one, but I was like, yeah. But yeah.
But I used to make people like listen to the lyrics, because, you know, people would want to be, I don't know, talking or doing something. I'm like, listen to these lyrics, because they were so good. So I do a lot of really where I like, I when I come on, I have this thing where I say, you know, I'm an expat, you know, and I'm here to perform an exorcism. And I have this town that I talk about in my comedy called A While Back. And I lived in A While Back, and it's next to a forest, you know, and yeah. And so the people there are the people that I make sort of fun of. Like, they still eat, they eat like it's World War II, just bread and water, you know? And so I make a lot of fun about A While Back and about being Black in Germany. Oh, and even about myself, you know, I talk about being born in Indiana, and I'm a concrete kid. And how I knew I was a concrete kid is whenever anything would happen, my mom would say, it's your ass fault.
Yeah, because like I have watched a couple of your TikToks. All I got to say is, yeah, you have a fascination with the woods. Let me just say that. I don't need to buy a ticket to be out in these woods. It's like, okay. It's like, yeah, look at this nature. It's like, yeah. So, yeah, that is like going from all the way from America to basically, yeah, Bavarian woods.
It's my Lake Wobegon. I think that's Bill Bryson who wrote about the place in Minnesota. So yeah, so this is sort of what I do in my TikToks, is sort of make fun of being sort of the fish out of water in Germany.
Hey, like, you know what, like, this is the thing, like, I'm with TikTok, like, I would simply say this, like, you hit a couple of TikToks out of the park. Where you are right now, you might be God knows where in the future. Do you know what I mean? And real big following potentially out there. So yeah, I think you should like go out there, like enjoy. But yeah, what I got to say is like, you need to, like, I get this vibe that you are, even though like you are a writer, comedian, like, you know, and like a speaker, I think it feels like this is the beginning of like some great adventure for you. Like, I don't know where you want this great adventure to take you, but like, yeah, like if you had to say what the next stage would be, like, you've mentioned Edinburgh Fringe, but like your one woman show, what you're doing right now, what would you say would be, say, a next stage for, okay, 3 years down the line, like, when, like, you know what I mean, 2 years from, like, looking 2 years down the barrel of that, an age which shall not be mentioned.
An age that has no name. I want to be on a stage with Lisa Nichols. You know, I want to be having my own special, and it doesn't have to be, you know, it could be through TikTok or some other YouTube channel, and that I could do my own special and have my own special there. And so, yeah, part of me is just sort of enjoying, like you said, this growth and like seeing how big I can grow and in what direction I should grow. And it's a learning experience for me too, as far as because there's always so many, you know, so many variables and so many different ways you could go and things you could do. So it's for me an adventure too, and I'm loving it. I mean, I'm not sort of, I'm not stuck on anything. I'm just sort of enjoying talking to you. I'm enjoying you know, meeting people and doing TikTok and YouTube, and yeah, it's just growth, I think. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's my words are like explore, courage, and resilience. Mm-hmm. You know, I give myself 3 words for the year that I say, what are you about? You know, and that's what I'm about. Courage, because I think life takes courage. And if you have the courage, then anything's possible. If you have just the courage to just go and try, you know, and sometimes, like they say, it's not a huge thing. It's just a small voice that says, I'll do it again tomorrow. You know, I'll just try again tomorrow. Mm. So be courageous, be kind, and be ready. Yeah. That's all I say.
Absolutely. Like, this is the thing. One of the things I would also say, put on that, into that, the power of consistency. No one actually remembers the power of consistency. And look, it's a power which can be used for positive things or negative things. And it manifests in either physically or, it manifests where you feel you should be in life. And like, people just like go, what do you mean power of consistency? You do bad things consistently. Bad things will come to you. It will find you in some way. You might think you're immune to it. No, but it, like, yeah, either bad things in life or physically, bad things physically. But the more positive things you do for yourself, either physically, mentally, or like, you know what I mean? Just with a, like, consistently a positive attitude, more good comes to you. And yeah. I think that's one of the things I often see. And like, it's one of those powers which you fail to see it until like a healthy chunk of time has gone by, or it's sadly too late.
Yeah. I forget who said that we overestimate what we can do in 3 months and underestimate what we can do in 3 years. You know, so it's just what you're saying, the consistency, just put in the work, put in the time for whatever it is you want, and don't give up. You know, that's the only thing that can stop you is if you give up. Mm. You know, nothing else really can.
No, indeed. Now, loving that. Look, you have been an absolute joy to speak to. And like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, all I've got to simply say is, yeah, this next question, I think, is going to be the thing which is going to definitely psychologically profile you in the realm of things. Now I'm like, this question, like, you're going to have to answer this question honestly. And like, I've got to say, it's not too sure how this is going to go down, but okay. Okay. Here we go. Now, you know the Muppet Show, the Muppet Sesame Street, all those guys. Okay. Now, if you had to put the whole cast of the Muppets into a movie of your choice, but you had to have one human actor, which film would that be and why?
Okay. Oh, you know, because I'm always about the learning. I'm always about education. So it would be, I would take the Muppets and I would put them into the movie Yentl. And I would put Barbra Streisand, who plays Yentl, she would still be there. It would be the Muppets and Barbra Streisand in Yentl.
I haven't seen Yentl, but like...
the musical... Yes. Oh, that movie really changed my life. I was about 15 or something when that came out. And and the story is, Yentl is this little Jewish girl, and it was at a time where girls weren't allowed to go to school. And it's a musical. It's Barbra Streisand, so you know it's a musical. Yeah, so she dresses up as Hansel, this boy, and she goes to school. You know, she gets her first books, and it's a beautiful movie. You have to see it. It's Yentl. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And the Muppets, I could see Mrs. Piggy. You know, Mrs. Piggy could be the girl that the boy was in love with, you know. Of course, because there's always a little love interest there. Yeah, and Kermit could be one of her school friends. So, wait, no, yeah, that's the Muppets. Yeah. Maybe Big Bird.
Well, Big Bird, like, no, hey, you know what? Like, yeah, oh my Lord.
Yeah. Come to America, because in the end, well, I will tell you the end.
No worries. Loving it, indeed. B. Yes, I I've got a new insight into who you are now. Muppets and Sesame Street characters in Yentl with Barbara Streisand. And it's a musical. That's some twisted humor right there. I'm loving it. Now, B, like, you have been an absolute joy, a pleasure to have on the show today. Would you be able to tell the lovely people out there how they can get hold of you, how they can find you out on these big wide webs?
Well, I'm going to say Linktree. My link, tr.ee/B Bauman, B-E-E Bauman. There they can find everything. You know, my TikTok, my book, all of that is on linktr.ee/B Bauman. Yeah.
Perfect. I will put that in the description. So yes, people will be able to find you out there on the web. So yeah, I would simply say yes. Please go find her. This, like, she's on the beginning of an exciting journey. I'm telling you this now. Like, and you're mostly going to be like, yeah, I remember when she was this when. And you know what I mean? Great things, great things. So let me say this to you, B. Thank you for coming on today. You have been an absolute superstar. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And let me say this to you, my friends, my life warriors, who are still with us today, right now. Thank you for staying with us. I'd like to say, please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic. Be all the positive bees you can be in this world and then some. Yeah, peace. And we...